Here comes another edition of the Fantasy Guru Podcast featuring the latest news, player and team analysis, fantasy strategy, and more. And now, here are the resident gurus, Joe Dolan and Graham Barfield.
Welcome, everyone. It is another edition of the Fantasy Guru Podcast here on the Podcast One Network, www.podcastone.com/fantasy-guru. I'm your host, Joe Dolan. I'm the managing editor of fantasyguru.com, and pleased to be joined today for our second of many podcasts. Senior analyst Graham Barfield. We're going to be discussing some of last night's games, Thursday night's games, rather, if you're listening to this at a later date. We're going to be breaking down some things around the NFL, some important injury news. Fortunately, it's been kind of a quiet training camp for that. These third preseason games, you guys know, are the dress rehearsal, and these are the ones we really need to get over before we can start locking in draft boards. And fortunately, we haven't had any really serious injuries, but what we have had, we will break down on today's podcast. Graham, I'll be getting to you in the sec, but I first want to let the subscribers know, number one, I've been asked 100 times, when is the new fantasyguru.com coming? It is coming soon. We are just making sure everything is working properly. We just want to make sure everything is, first and foremost, functional for people during August, which is our most important month, as you might imagine. And then we want to kind of get it ready for the brand new season and start rolling things out like that. Number two, just a reminder to subscribe to the new podcast feed. We will be linking to it on the site Twitter, at Fantasy Guru Site. I will be tweeting it out at FG_Dolan, and Graham will be tweeting it out at Graham Barfield. We've had new podcasts this week from John Hansen, Greg Cosell, Ross Tucker made a guest appearance on that podcast. We had the debut of the Down to the Wire podcast with Paul Kelly and Tom Brawley. That will be coming to you every Tuesday morning throughout the regular season as we break down the waiver wire for you. But if you're not somebody who likes to kind of mind the waiver wire, if you're somebody who likes to start fresh every week and you've got a passion for football, well, I have some news for you. You know all the players and teams, their strengths and weaknesses. Now put that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at the $1 million top prize at DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes they're doling out in this week one contest. DraftKings.com is the destination for 1 week fantasy football. 1 week fantasy means no season long commitments. You play whenever you want with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your players, and follow your team live. We just discussed that there haven't been any real serious injuries in the preseason thus far, but you know they're coming during the regular season. You can avoid the headache of all that by playing at DraftKings. Renew old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove you're the superior GM, or join an existing league and go head-to-head with friends, coworkers, and fantasy players from all across the country. Hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your players, and you could seriously cash in week one. That is 2 weeks from this weekend, week one of the NFL season. Use code GURU and play for free with your first deposit. That's code GURU, G-U-R-U, to play free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in this week one contest. Only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See the website for details. Remember, that is code GURU, G-U-R-U. And Graham, I know you're excited for some DFS football. I'm not sure if you're one of the people who plays preseason DFS. I happen to shy away from that. I personally am excited for college football to come back. That's where I get my fix, if you will, before the NFL season kicks off. However, the third preseason games is when we start to see these teams come together, and we had two very interesting ones last night. So first, allow me to welcome you in. How you been doing?
I've been doing great, man. This has been, we're right around the corner basically from football season. And like you said, week three is the dress rehearsal. So we kind of get that first taste of what the season's going to be like. So I'm ready to get it started. That's all I can say.
Yeah, me too. You were texting me last night. We were discussing Ryan Tannehill, and we were also talking yesterday. I believe yesterday, which was the 25th at this point, we're recording this on Friday, the 26th of August. And it was the last day for MFL 10s to launch, and you and I were discussing that. I've been getting a great fix with the occasional MFL 10. I didn't play as many this year as I did last year, but we were just discussing. I've had some incredibly good luck. I seem to have picked in the top three in like 70% of my MFL 10s. You didn't go on a run of luck until recently, and man, it's amazing. When you pick in the top three of these things, just to get on a little tangent, I get a different trio of studs every single time. It's not even the same trio. It's just the players you can get when you're picking at the top three is just outstanding this year. So my piece of advice, if you're in one of those leagues where you pick your draft slot or you draft your draft slot, I actually am in one myself, if you can get one of the top three, Graham, it's the place to be this year.
Yeah, I mean, I love being able, like, if you get the 102, you get Julio, and then you'll get your shot at, like, T.Y. Hilton, Jamaal Charles, who we've talked about on this pod last time. The combos are pretty unreal, and like you said, just kind of the dearth and the depth of options that you have in that spot is just, it's kind of the primo real estate this year. I really like drafting on the turn, so, like, 101 to 103, and then 110 to 112. Seems to be where I draft the teams that look the prettiest, but then again, pretty teams don't win leagues.
No, I mean, it's amazing how many teams I love that before the season that turn out to be not so hot, but we're just trying to avoid injuries. And anyway, we do have some action to break down from last night. Let's start with that Dolphins-Falcons game, 17-6. Wasn't the prettiest game. Ryan Tannehill, you and I were both pretty impressed with what he did. He was 20-29 for 155. With a pick, not a great pick, ran for 22 yards. He was actually the Dolphins' leading rusher in this game. Kenny Stills, this is a guy who's always been kind of greater in the minds of people, I think, than in actuality, but he's been their leading receiver during the preseason. He's been running with them in two receiver sets, and while I wouldn't panic if I have Devontae Parker because they're pretty much going to be a base three receiver team. I think that's all the indications from Gase's history and from what they've been doing thus far in the preseason. It is notable that Stills has been very, very strong. He's seemed to pick up the offense, and he's been producing, and he is essentially free for fantasy. So if you're buying into – let me ask you this. If you're buying into Adam Gase – are you buying into Ryan Tannehill as a QB2? And, therefore, are you buying into Kenny Stills potentially as a valuable end-of-bench option?
Yeah, so first thing on Tannehill, what's most interesting is Adam Gase. You know, granted, obviously, he had Peyton Manning in 2013, 2014, so that certainly helps, and I don't really take too much away from those offenses because I think Manning pretty much ran them for the most part. But last year, Gase actually turned Jay Cutler into a serviceable starter. Cutler had his second lowest interception rate of his career and his highest adjusted yards per attempt in 2015. I think Gase can definitely turn Tannehill kind of around. I mean, Tannehill's always struggled with the deep ball. That's kind of always been his thing. But again, it's preseason, et cetera, those disclaimers. As they are, he has looked sharp, and I think Adam Gase can only help him this year. As for Kenny Stills, I'm a little surprised, man. Like, Devontae Parker did not have one single snap in two wide receiver sets last night. It was just Landry and Kenny Stills. Granted, you know, they run their base offense out of three wide receiver sets for the most part, with Landry kicked inside, Parker and Stills on the outside. But I am a little surprised that Stills is running with the two wide receiver sets. And they're not going to get anything out of Jordan Cameron unless just something drastically changes. So I'm kind of on board with Stills as just a very, very cheap dart. I think you are too.
Yeah. Well, the thing I like about him, Graham, is he's not one of those cheap dart throws who is going to catch 50 passes for 610 yards and score 5 touchdowns. Matt Camp and I always talk about those guys on our weekend program on SiriusXM, and we discuss them as the guys who are constantly available on your waiver wire on Sunday that are going to catch you 4 passes for 50 yards if that's what you need, because a guy who is questionable who you expected to play ends up being inactive on Sunday morning. Those type of guys, I just never draft them because they're always out there. Kenny Stills, I think, actually has some weak winning potential based on his skill set. So he's, especially now, if you're in an MFL 10, if you managed to beat the deadline yesterday, somebody to consider around the 14th, 15th, 16th round as somebody who can maybe put up a couple games of four catches for 110 yards because he scored a 65-yard touchdown. And that's a guy who will, believe it or not, those are the guys who end up cashing you in MFL 10s because sometimes you just need that extra boost to get over the hump. Not a whole lot from the Dolphins' backfield in this game. Ajayi started. Arian Foster maybe looked a little bit better than he did in his first game with the Dolphins, but still only averaged 2 yards a carry. He's still going to play on third down and in goal line situations, which is certainly a concern if you're drafting Jay Ajayi, but I don't think you're drafting Jay Ajayi with the expectation that he's going to score 10 touchdowns anyway. So certainly not a big issue there. Now, here is the issue that I am most worried about. And it's not to say I was valuing Matt Ryan highly, not to say I was predicting a breakout, but Graham, he was awful last night. 12 of 22 for 129 and a pick. And yet again, it was a red zone interception for Matt Ryan. He got off to a relatively hot start in Kyle Shanahan's offense last year, but he absolutely face-planted after the fact, and he hasn't looked any better this preseason. He's completed under 50% of his passes. Does this concern you as it relates to Julio Jones? Because Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman, I think, are the only two Falcon players people are drafting expecting a major contribution. But Julio, does it scare you that Matt Ryan seems to have not improved, at least to this point?
I mean, we've seen, the thing with Julio is we've seen just transcendent talents just completely rise above poor quarterback play. And I think Julio is just one of those types of players where, as long as he's spoon-fed his targets, as long as he stays, you know, healthy for the most of the year, I'm not too concerned about him just because volume will probably outweigh any efficiency concerns. But wrapping back to your point about Matt Ryan, he's it was a brutal 2015 last year for him. Mm-hmm. He was league average in touchdown rate inside of the 10-yard line, and he had his career-worst touchdown rate as a whole in 2015. And Joe, I actually sent you this stat in Google Chat this week. It's one of my favorite Matt Ryan stats. So when Roddy White was 29 to 32 years old and Tony Gonzalez was in Atlanta, this is from 2010 to 2013, Matt Ryan's touchdown rate was 4.8%. In all of his other seasons, Ryan's touchdown rate is 4.1%. For me, Ryan just is a type of guy that is elevated by the talent that surrounds him, and he's not the type of guy that elevates the talent on his team. So to me, Julio is safe. I'm not too scared of that. I think Freeman is too, but I think anyone that is expecting Matt Ryan to kind of jump back into the QB1 conversation, it kind of looks futile to me. Again, it's still early, but I don't feel overly confident with him on the board, especially when, you know, guys like Tyrod Taylor or Andy Dalton are still on the board.
Yeah, it's... was not pretty for Ryan last year. He ended up on a lot of waiver wires after he was being drafted as kind of a top 10 quarterback. Just a couple other little notes. Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman kind of split snaps right down the middle again with the first team. Freeman, again, was the more effective of the backs. Coleman hasn't had an outstanding preseason, but nothing really to be concerned about here. And if you're in one of those leagues that still has kickers, Shane Graham looks like he could win the job here. Matt Bryant still hasn't been able to get on the field. Shane Graham nails a 53-yard field goal. Looks like Matt Bryant could be out of a job, could end up somewhere else, especially if the Giants finally cut Josh Brown, as that story gets uglier each and every day. Oh, and Aldrick Robinson, the erstwhile Redskins deep threat, it looks like he's going to be the number three receiver here behind Julio and Mohamed Sanu. He continues to make plays if you're looking for another one of those deep threat dart throws. If you're playing in a league that gives you extra points for long touchdowns. There was another game last night, Graham, and I think this is the one where the big news came out. The Seahawks beat the Cowboys 27-17. Let's start with the Cowboys. First of all, Tony Romo leaves with a back injury. Might well be minor. Ed Werder, I think, was reporting that it is minor. But I think we know from history with a guy like Tony Romo, I think we know from history with anybody who's had back problems, and I'm talking from elite athletes down to your grandmother, these things do not go away. And Tony Romo's back injury is not going away. It is strictly a case of managing it, and it was very scary to see him grab his back after getting folded up from behind by Cliff Avril.
Yeah, when you texted me that, I immediately jumped on Twitter because the game wasn't being televised then, and I saw the vines and almost vomited all over my phone. Like you said, I mean, thank God it does sound minor, but man, it just kind of takes your breath away when you start drafting Dez, and you're not, you know, you're as heavy as Dez on as I am this year. It's definitely pretty brutal to see.
And the play of Dak Prescott, though, continues to be impressive. He's now 30 of 50 during the preseason for 454 and 2 touchdowns. His only real huge mistake was an interception that was called back because of a penalty. That's got to make you feel a little bit better about being on Dez. And look, I don't want to overreact to what Dak Prescott has done. Our guy Greg Cosell noted on the podcast with John Hansen that he's barely done any straight dropback stuff, but it's hard not to be encouraged by what he's done. The guy was a third-round pick. If this was Jared Goff doing what Dak Prescott's doing, we'd be jumping out the window. We'd be like, oh, man, this is amazing. So you have to be impressed by what Prescott's done, and you got to note he got a lot of time with the first-team offense against the first-team Seahawk defense last night.
Yeah, just on that note with Prescott, like you said, if you know, one of the, you know, Wentz, you know, he's hurt right now, or if Goff was doing this, it would be all over the place, and Prescott mania has already kind of started. So that's definitely interesting, and I think he is competent, but like you said, he hasn't really had to do too much. The Dallas offensive line is just obviously amazing for a lot of different reasons, and, you know, teams typically don't blitz in the preseason, so he hasn't had too much pressure in his face yet. But like you said, it's obviously encouraging that he looks so competent as just a third rounder this year. You know, it's going to be at least marginally better than what they had last year if Romo does go down again.
You're right. They didn't have competent backup play last year.
Right.
Like, that's huge for somebody like Dak Prescott to come in and maybe give them a little bit of upside. And certainly Dez Bryant not being healthy last year was a big factor as well. And then amazing how Ezekiel Elliott making his debut could be kind of buried as a lead, but given what happened to Romo, it is. But Elliott was very, very good in this game. 7 carries for 48 yards. I think this is exactly what people who had Elliott drafted in the first round wanted to see from him. Tough, smooth runner. Like, I watched Elliott Graham immediately after watching all of Arian Foster's touches. And look, Arian Foster's 30 and he's coming off an Achilles tear, but my God, there's not even a comparison right now. The economy of movement with Elliott is just beyond what you would expect from most running backs. He's going to be very good. The offensive line in this game was phenomenal, as you would expect. That's not a surprise. And Alfred Morris also looked good. Note this, Alfred Morris caught 2 passes in this game. He's caught, I believe, 4 this preseason. Not something you expect from him, but he is clearly the top backup to Ezekiel Elliott right now in Dallas with Darren McFadden. Who knows what's going to happen with him. And now switching over to the Seahawks, Thomas Rawls doesn't play as expected. Kristen Michael got the start, looked very good. Again, 7 carries for 58 yards, but also CJ Procise gets on the field playing in third down situations. He had 4 of 23 rushing. That was very good to see for people who maybe spent early rookie picks on CJ Procise or spent picks on him in MFL 10s, expecting him to carve out a role. But the most important note here is that everybody's favorite breakout candidate at the receiver position, Tyler Lockett, he did go for 3 for 41 and a touchdown in this game. But Graham, you're a little bit concerned about how he's being used.
Yeah, I was texting you last night during the game. I'm afraid that he's not going to be on the field in the Seahawks 2 wide receiver sets. Per Adam Levitan of DraftKings and Fantasy Labs, Russell Wilson has played 75 preseason snaps. And Doug Baldwin has been on the field for 68 of those. Jeremy Kearse has been on the field for 63. And Tyler Lockett has only been on the field for 39 of those snaps. This is kind of what they were doing last year, too. And this is actually includes the Jimmy Graham in their offense. But last year, Lockett actually saw a target on 10.4% of his offensive snaps. Granted, that was ahead of Jermaine Kearse at 8.8%. But he was still well behind Doug Baldwin at 12.9% and Jimmy Graham at 12.6%. The problem this year with Lockett is his cost. I mean, he's going in the 5th round, and I think at his ADP, he's kind of priced out if we're at least a little bit concerned about his usage, and I'm very concerned about his usage.
And that actually kind of mirrors Devontae Parker in a way, because they're both going, I think, around the same point, and I think it's more the fantasy community always is waiting for these guys to take the step forward. And look, we're far more excited about Devontae Parker than we are about Kenny Stills. We're far more excited about Tyler Lockett than we are about Jermaine Kearse. But sometimes guys don't play for whatever reason. And I'm not saying that sometimes coaches can't be dumb. You know, sometimes it is Occam's razor. Sometimes coaches are just a little bit dumb. But I don't think we have the ability to call Pete Carroll that, given the amount of success he and Daryl Bevel have had running this offense. So maybe Jermaine Kearse gives them something that they aren't seeing from Tyler Lockett. I do expect Lockett and Parker to get their fair share, but it is something worth pointing out at this point. Graham, before we move on, I skipped over it, but how are you treating the Dolphin backfield at this point? Ajayi is certainly falling behind Foster, if not in some cases well behind Foster in ADP. I'm still not on Foster. I think the fact that he scored a touchdown in this game is going to get people excited. He had a couple catches, one of the longer variety, but I want him to look decent because I want him to go as high as possible in drafts because I'm not considering him.
Hey, I mean, we're supposed to be the ones giving advice here, man. Not being selfish. And actually, as you said that, it rang in my head. We were talking about this earlier. Actually, Foster went ahead of Matt Forte in one of these MFL pins I'm doing, which is I haven't been drafting Matt Forte much this summer, but I'm getting back in on Forte if that's the going rate. Foster's basically an easy fade for me. He's just 30 years old, coming off two major injuries. You know, we all know about the Achilles rupture from last year, but he tore his groin off the bone at this time last year. The only thing that's really going for him is Adam Gase. And Adam Gase's offense is he typically gives his lead running back 68% of the snaps, and the lead back usually has double the amount of carries than the second back in rotation. I don't think Foster's going to get that type of workload, and to me, I think Foster and Ajayi are just going to kind of eat into each other unless one of them gets hurt. To me, early in the year, it's just going to be really, really troublesome to kind of project these two guys from a week-to-week basis.
Speaking of running backs who typically eat into each other's workloads, Graham, earlier this week, you broke down at fantasyguru.com, and we encourage anybody to check that article out. It is free, even for non-subscribers. You broke down the effect of Deion Lewis's injury in New England on the Patriots' backfield. And look, I had been a Deion Lewis supporter since he got on the field with New England. I called him a number one fantasy running back in PPR basically for the last 4 weeks before he went down with his injury. It was unfortunate, and more unfortunate is that he's now out for what looks to be at least 2 months following a cleanup procedure. He's going to open the season on the PUP list, could at least is going to miss 6 games, if not more than that, but it now opens the door for more players to be valuable here. And of course, I'm speaking of James White, who I think is going to get the biggest boost from this, especially now that Donald Brown, who is always the fly in the ointment for fantasy, he has been cut. And it opens the door for James White, and it also opens it for LeGarrette Blount to maybe do more, run the ball a little bit more. How are you treating this backfield at this point? How does James White look to you? He had, statistically, one of the most fascinating profiles I have ever seen from the running back position. Last year, when he was on the field, I believe, Graham, he only ran for more than 10 yards, like, once, and yet was putting up very solid PPR fantasy numbers last year.
Yeah, so he only actually averaged, he averaged less than 2 carries a game, but he was basically a floor RB2 last year. And like you said, it's an interesting that the Patriots pass catching back is very, very interesting. And before I get into this, like you mentioned, this article and all this data I'm about to spew out here is free on fantasyguru.com. But getting back to it, James White and the Patriots pass catching back has been just a bastion of efficiency over the past 4 years. In fact, any Patriot back to see 50 or more targets in a given season has finished inside of the top seven among all running backs in PPR points per, in PPR points per opportunity, which is insane to me. That actually covers really Danny Woodhead. Yeah, covers Danny Woodhead, covers Shane Vereen for 2 years, and it also covers James White and Deion Lewis from last year. It's pretty excellent just in terms of efficiency. Where are you drafting White right now? It's an interesting kind of dilemma. There's a lot of spots he could go.
I'm going to be honest with you. Profile-wise, statistical profile, maybe not the same type of player, but statistically, he looks like Theo Riddick. But right now, I see fewer challengers for James White's role than I do for Theo Riddick's. Should James White be going ahead of Theo Riddick? I think you can make that argument.
Yeah, they're like you said, they're basically the same profile. And, you know, they're obviously Tom Brady's out until week five, until he comes back against Cleveland. So we know the Patriots are probably going to have a lot more juice and a lot more scoring opportunities on offense. I think you can make the argument for sure.
It's the efficiency here is what's really critical to me. 2.5 yards per carry for James White. He ran for 56 yards last year. Hey, we're not telling you, you got to go out and get this guy at all costs. Deion Lewis was a far superior interior runner to James White. He's just one of those guys who knew how to get yards. I don't think White is that guy, but White can catch the ball, and he has experience in pass protection. He was a very solid pass protector all the way back at Wisconsin. So you know he's going to be on the field in third down situations and in passing situations. And that makes it interesting for me early in the season with Tom Brady suspended, because LeGarrette Blount is their play from ahead back. He's their play when the Patriots are favorites back. But what are the betting lines going to look like? What are the game plans going to look like when Jimmy Garoppolo is the Patriots starting quarterback? This makes Blount an interesting player as well. And he's always a guy who, when people ask me about Blount, and he's never been one of my favorite players. Personally, I don't like watching him, but I understand his value in the fantasy hierarchy. I always tell them, do not look at his season ranking. Whether we have him ranked at fantasyguru.com 45th, 5th, 75th, it doesn't matter. LeGarrette Blount is the definition of a weekly play. Some weeks we're going to rank him 70. Some weeks we're going to rank him 15. It just depends on what the week is. But what do you expect from Blount when Jimmy Garoppolo's in at quarterback? Because that's the most interesting question for me.
Yeah, so two things on that Blount point. When the Patriots are favored, Blount actually averages 11.5 PPR points per game. This is since 2013. And for reference, just 12 backs last year actually got the 11.5 PPR points per game milestone last year. In all other contests, that's when, you know, the Patriots are favored by six or less, or they're dogs, which doesn't happen very often. Blount actually only averages 5.4 PPR points per game. So, like you said, fantasy football is a weekly game, and LeGarrette Blount is the absolute definition of that. Do we expect, though, the Patriots to be heavy favorites going into the first 4 weeks? That's the issue right now with Blount.
And I don't know if Garoppolo looks good the rest of the preseason. Sure, I could see them being favored. I think that's, in large part, it's almost as much a Bill Belichick betting line as it is a Tom Brady betting line. But I think people are going to be a little bit more hesitant to put Blount in their lineups with Garoppolo out there than they are with Brady, even if the Patriots are favored. And I think that makes James White even more interesting, because if the Patriots are in more third and long situations, if they're in more of a kind of shotgun type of offense to make Jimmy Garoppolo, who played in the spread at Eastern Illinois, a little bit more comfortable, then you're going to see James White out there. And that makes him somebody who should be going, at least in my mind, around Theo Riddick in PPR drafts. Let me just pull this up. What is on fantasypros.com? I'm just taking Theo Riddick's aggregate ADP. In PPR leagues, Graham, he is drafted as about the 38th running back. That sounds about right to me. I think that's where James White should be going. And
yeah, I would actually agree with that. And on that Garoppolo point, I actually pulled this up just going through the game logs in the article I wrote on Fantasy Guru. And granted, of course, this is just 39 preseason attempts from this year. But Garoppolo has actually targeted a running back or a fullback on 25.6% of his throws this year. And Tom Brady actually only targeted a running back on 18.3% of his attempts over the last three seasons. Again, very, very small sample size. I'm not looking too much into that. But we just based on that tiny, tiny, minuscule sample size, White's usage looks pretty safe, at least until Deion Lewis gets back. And like you mentioned, we don't even know if Lewis is going to be back by week seven when he would be eligible to come off PUP.
And even at that point, though, if it's week eight and Deion Lewis is off the PUP and you're 5-2 in large part because James White has been your RB2 to that point, well, you've banked those wins. All right. Then if you're not confident in James White, well, thank him for his service and move on from him. Find somebody else. Keep working the waiver wire. But he's somebody who I think can help you win games in PPR very early in the season. If it's non-PPR, good luck with that. Like I said, he topped 10 rushing yards just once last season. He's a pass catcher first and foremost. And also remember, a lot of his value did come with touchdowns. So I think he's in the Riddick range, but there are reasons to think he will regress his efficiency from last year, but also that his usage might well go up. Graham, before we wrap this up, some interesting tight end news coming down the pike. I think most importantly, Kobe Fleener, the New Orleans Times Picayune reports or suggests that he has been a little bit of a disappointment thus far with dropped passes and maybe mental lapses. Don't know where they would have gotten the idea we could get those from Kobe Fleener, but it's an issue. And it's what people were throwing in our faces when we ranked Fleener aggressively this preseason. And we're not going to back off of him just yet, but this is yet another highly drafted tight end who we're projecting potential onto, who seems like he could have a little bit of a rougher going than we anticipated he would. And it throws yet another wrench into a very difficult to evaluate position in terms of ADP and where you should start really considering these guys.
Yeah. So I was actually listening to the Around the NFL podcast earlier this morning. And they actually brought up a really good point. Ben Watson, you know, he had his career best season by far at age 35. But Ben Watson was with the Saints for 3 years. And we know Sean Payton and Drew Brees' offenses are very intricate. Brees is obviously an established veteran. He knows what he's doing. Same with Sean Payton. I think we have to kind of cut Fleener a little bit of flack because this offense is intricate. They do spread the ball around a ton. And I think anyone that was kind of expecting him to just jump in and immediately be what Ben Watson was last year, and that was 110 targets. Ben Watson actually had 8 top 12 weeks in PPR leagues last year. That was the same number as Travis Kelce. I think it's time to kind of tone it down a little bit on Fleener because there was going to be a learning curve to begin with. And I think we're kind of seeing it just at least in small glimpses from reports. Again, air quotes reports. We haven't played an actual game yet, but it's definitely not the most encouraging thing.
So, by the way, this was Larry Holder, longtime Saints beat writer for the New Orleans Times Picayune, who reported this. And this is his observation. I'm sure he's plugged in as well, but this is what he's observed in camp and kind of reading between the lines. So you're right, not time to panic, but that was a great point about Ben Watson that the guys made on the Around the NFL podcast. And this is why some people, I've seen it on Twitter today, Graham, some people throwing out, is Josh Hill the post-type sleeper here?
Oh, God, no.
He was so bad last year. He didn't even get a chance to be bad, really, because Ben Watson was the dominant. But you never know with this Saint offense, and you know Sean Payton loves to troll fantasy players. They signed John Kuhn. This is an unconfirmed stat. I haven't looked it up, but I think Saint fullbacks and backup tight ends average about 27 touchdowns per season. You're going to have to confirm that one for me, Graham, but I know I'm right in the ballpark.
It's definitely close. That's for sure.
No doubt.
What is the name of Humananuwawi? I don't even know.
Ho-Manawanui.
Yeah, there we go.
I love that name. Yeah.
Oh, it's awesome, but I can never for the life of me pronounce it. He's going to score at least 5 touchdowns.
Oh, John Kuhn, 10 he's getting all kinds of opportunities. Mark Ingram's going to have a series where he drives 95 yards by himself and they're putting Kuhn in the game and he's going to score the touchdown. I can see it right now. Anyway, I just wanted to talk about the tight end position in general before we wrap this up, especially as it relates to Fleener. You're certainly drafting Gronk and Jordan Reed over Fleener. I would think at this point you're certainly drafting Greg Olsen over Kobe Fleener, somebody who's more reliable. So I'm just going to throw out a little exercise here to you. Give me a simple yes or no, above Kobe Fleener or not. Travis Kelce.
Yes, definitely.
Delanie Walker.
Absolutely.
Gary Barnidge.
No.
Yeah, that's where it starts to get tough. Zach Ertz.
No.
And here's another guy to discuss, Tyler Eifert.
Definitely not. News actually just came out that he's going to be out until at least week 3 to 4 at the earliest with that ankle injury. So you're taking zeros from Eifert early on, and you know he possibly could miss more time. So that's a definite no for me.
How are you treating Tyler Eifert? I mean, he's one of those guys, Graham, who I can't in good conscience rank him below somebody like Dwayne Allen. Yet he's somebody who I haven't drafted yet because somebody always inevitably takes him before I'm willing to draft him. So he's kind of, by me not actively targeting him, he's kind of just not on my draft board at all.
Yeah, that same exact thing for me. He's an easy fade. It's amazing to me. I was kind of in on him before we kind of got a little bit of a timeline in July, but I'm way out now. Last year, I think I've quoted this stat before, but last year, around 41% of Eifert's PPR output was derived from touchdowns alone. Top 12 average, that's the top 12 scoring tight ends last year, they derived about 21% of their 21% of their PPR output from touchdowns. The thing is, we know his touchdowns are going to regress. That much is probably true, but Cincinnati has actually lost 152 targets this year with Mohamed Sanu gone and Marvin Jones out of the picture. Tyler Boyd's probably going to man the slot, but he might play a little more outside. So when Eifert does come back, he will see more targets, more than likely, but the issue is we don't know when he's going to return.
So another guy who's been in the news is Ladarius Green, and you want to talk about another guy I haven't drafted. Now, Green, I believe reports are he is insistent that he is on the PUP strictly because of his ankle, that the headache reports are erroneous. I'm not really sure how to treat this. What are you doing with Ladarius Green?
Same thing as you, man. I'm throwing my hands up. I have no idea what to do. He's slipping all the way back into the 14th, 15th, sometimes even in the 16th round. And at that price, I'm kind of just stashing him. Maybe not so much in best balls, unless you have like a really strong two tight ends ahead of him. But same thing with me. It's just he hasn't seen the field yet. He hasn't practiced once. I wish we could get some clarity if it is the ankle that he needed surgery on in January. If we get clarity that it's the concussions just throughout his career, we just have no real information on when he can even possibly practice.
And bringing this full circle, what a perfect example of why people like us, people like those listening to this podcast, are projecting onto Kobe Fleener what he can be, what he might be, what he should be in this same offense. Because of the questions, I mean, we basically spent, what, 2 or 3 minutes ripping Kobe Fleener and all the struggles that he had with the Colts, and you still can't find 6 guys you'd rather take than him at the tight end position. It's uncanny.
Okay, I'll give you one, Joe, actually. Who would you rather have? Would you rather have Fleener, or would you rather have Antonio Gates?
Oh, I knew that one was coming. This is funny you asked this, because I drafted a team in the Flex Leagues down in D.C. that has both of them on it.
Yeah, see? That's perfect.
Isn't that perfect, though?
You get a floor in Gates, and you get a ceiling in Fleener, and Fleener's ceiling is probably top 3. That's in his range of outcomes, but Fleener's floor is literally probably basement level.
Let me hedge on Kobe Fleener then. If I'm making the investment into Kobe Fleener as a ceiling guy, I'm probably going to draft my second tight end earlier than some teams are going to draft their first. I want to protect that investment, and Antonio Gates is a very good way to do that. I think Zach Ertz is a good way to do that. I think Zach Ertz is in for a big catch here. maybe even a Dwayne Allen. He's kind of slipped through the cracks a little bit, but now he doesn't have to deal with Fleener anymore. So I think you can... here's a perfect one, Graham. A guy whose ADP continues to fall just because he's so damn boring. Jason Witten.
Yeah, I was just staring at him too. That's a good one.
You can pair Fleener and Jason Witten, and I think, all right, maybe Fleener is driving you nuts, but you know Jason Witten's going to give you 9 to 12 points a week. So yeah, at least you can do that.
You know Witten will walk out, he'll run onto the field and get you 5 catches for 50 yards, and you'll be happy. And if he plays the Giants, he'll have like 9 receptions for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns.
I just don't get this guy. He looks like he's on a Segway out there, and he still gets open. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Good friend JJ Zacharyson, he has like a little meme that he posts that JJ with Jason Witten mowing the lawn. It's quite hilarious.
Yeah,
it's pretty great.
It's ideal for him. Not to say he was ever the athlete that Tony Gonzalez was, but Tony Gonzalez at the end of his career, he just wasn't open. He'd just catch everything anyway.
Right.
And Jason Witten is kind of like that at this point.
So is Antonio Gates.
Yeah, and Gates, of course, he is the modern prototype and his prime for what we look for in a tight end now. But now he's just, I guess he's dad running as well, as a little shout out to JJ. But these veteran quarterbacks, man, they love their tight ends who don't get separation. They just find a void in the zone. And Drew Brees would probably love somebody who can do that, but he doesn't. So that's why we're hoping Kobe Fleener breaks out. Anyway, Graham, I think this was a wonderful episode. Just hitting on a couple of things. Getting ready for the season. Here's one of those things. I don't think we needed to do this podcast, but you were saying it yesterday. You're like, you want to do one? And I'm like, yeah, let's do one tomorrow. And I think that's a good way to go about it, because I think we had a very natural, fun conversation here. I think this is a good way to get amped for the season. And obviously, once we get into the season, we're going to have all kinds of things to talk about. I have never been accused of being brief, either in my writing or in my talking. So this is probably going to be on the shorter end for our podcast, I would think. I think we're approaching, 40 minutes now? That's pretty good. But I hope you have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Yeah, same to you, and we'll enjoy some of the football. I'll be driving to Atlanta on Sunday, hopefully. This little tropical storm looking thing off the coast of Cuba doesn't destroy me on Sunday on 95, but I'll be all right.
Hope as long as you get your game reviews up. That's all that matters.
That's the big thing.
Certainly.
I got them tomorrow.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'm glad about that. Stay safe, for the love of God. I hate weather. Anybody who's listened to the podcast before knows I hate snow. You don't have to deal with that down there. I am going to soak up the last few weeks of summer here until we get into the fall, which is my favorite season. Unfortunately, it's also the shortest one. But I am ready for football season. I know you're ready for football season. We're ready for the dress rehearsals. These are when you learn the most about teams. And I hope everybody who has a draft this coming weekend, they understand that we are here for you. You can tweet me at FG_Dolan. You can tweet Graham at Graham Barfield. Follow all of us at Fantasy Guru Site. If you click on that profile, you'll have everybody's Twitter handle in there. And we will be tweeting out the link to the new podcast feed at Podcast One if you are not yet a subscriber. And a reminder, the brand new FantasyGuru.com is coming very soon. You want to sign up and prepare for your drafts and get in on the ground floor. So for Graham Barfield, I am Joe Dolan. Thank you for tuning in to the Fantasy Guru Podcast. Have a great weekend, everyone, and happy drafting.
Stay tuned for 60-second AP News headlines.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire. Hillary Clinton is demanding once again that Donald Trump release his tax returns. To reporters writing on her campaign plane, Clinton accuses Trump of a number of questionable business deals over the years.
The list goes on and on. The scams, the frauds, the questionable relationships, the business activities that have stiffed workers, refused to pay small businesses.
Clinton is to be at a rally in Tampa this afternoon. Trump, for his part, is campaigning today in Virginia and North Carolina. AP White House correspondent Julie Pace reports Trump has been able to dial back the off-the-cuff remarks.
He likes to go in front of these big crowds and be more freewheeling and play off of their energy. Now he's going out there with teleprompters and with scripted remarks, and it really is a testament to his campaign leadership that they've gotten him to a point where where he's willing to do this for at least a couple of weeks.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire.